This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Have you ever found yourself doubting how smart your friends really are because of something they shared on Facebook? You're scrolling through your feed, minding your own business, and bam, a link to some article from some shady pseudo-news site screaming about something that is not true, with a fiery comment from your friend who fell for this clickbait. Now, this would be merely an annoyance if these kinds of articles were not a source of revenue for scammers and a source of information for some voters. We live in an age of fake news and alternative facts where reality and illusion have become dangerously blurred. But if this seems like a modern-day problem, the kind of thing your parents or your grandparents would have been far too savvy to fall for in their day, don't give them too much credit. History teaches us they were just as gullible as we are, as Americans have apparently always been. And when we were not being gullible, we were doubling down on our personal truths. Kurt Anderson is a best-selling novelist and the host of the public radio program Studio 360. His new book traces the history of our nation's conspiracies, concoctions, con artists, and cults. He joins us from WNYC in New York to discuss his book, Fantasyland: How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history. Kurt Anderson, welcome to 1A.
Happy to be here, Joshua. Thank you.
We'd love to hear from you, too. Tell us about some of the things, if you're willing to admit them, that you choose to believe despite lack of proof or even evidence to the contrary, and what's driving you to hold on to this. Or, conversely, some of the things that you wish people could let go of believing in. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@wamu.org. Kurt Anderson, how did this book come about?
Well, first of all, this book did not come about as a result of the election of President Donald Trump. He entered the scene, entered politics, really, as I was finishing it and became the Exhibit A for what my 500-year history is all about. He really, to an amazing degree, embodies every one of my threads and arguments. It came about because I have been, as a writer, thinking for a lot of years about the various ways that Americans are different than other people in the developed world. In our, as you say, a willingness to believe the untrue, the dubious, the empirically unprovable, in our other kinds of immersion in the blur between reality and fiction, in how we dress up in cosplay and how we go to Comic-Con and embrace everything from Hollywood to Disneyland to virtual reality. And as I looked into it and as I began thinking about how we got here, of course, our incredible religious history, our extravagant and extreme religiosity as a people compared to people in the rest of the developed world, and that we have been again and again and again in America, because it's the land of the free, suckers for charlatans.
One of the things that you mentioned in the book, I did read the book, and one of the things that you mentioned was this epiphany you had when you saw the debut of the Colbert Report on Comedy Central, where its commentator, Stephen Colbert, playing this kind of right-wing character, did his first commentary styled after former Fox News host Bill O'Reilly, where he introduced a particular word into the American lexicon. Here is a piece of the debut episode of the Colbert Report.
And that brings us to tonight's word. Truthiness. Now, I'm sure some of the word police, the wordinistas over at Webster's, are gonna say, hey, that's not a word. Well, anybody who knows me know that I'm no fan of dictionaries or reference books. They're elitist. Constantly telling us what is or isn't true or what did or didn't happen. Who's Britannica to tell me the Panama Canal was finished in 1914? If I want to say it happened in 1941, that's my right. I don't trust books. They're all fact, no heart. And that's exactly what's pulling our country apart today. Because face it, folks, we are a divided nation. Not between Democrats and Republicans, or conservatives and liberals, or tops and bottoms. No. We are divided between those who think with their head and those who know with their heart. Because that's where the truth comes from, ladies and gentlemen, the gut.
That was Stephen Colbert in the debut episode of The Colbert Report. Kurt, there is so much to unpack from that quote. I don't even know where to start.
It's everything. I mean, it's Fantasyland in a nutshell. It's
right.
Exactly that. He hit it on the head. It's like, yeah, it's what I feel to be true is true. It is as Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan famously said when he was alive a generation ago, as full Fantasyland was dawning, everyone is entitled to his or her own opinions, but not his or her own facts. And Americans more and more have felt entitled to their own facts. But again, there's a long, long history of this. It didn't happen in 2000. It didn't happen in 2016. We've been walking along this path in various ways for a long time.
I wonder if it may be a good place to begin is with part of what Mr. Colbert said near the end of that clip. And he did touch on a lot of things. This idea of truthiness, something that kind of feels true, was exemplified in that last sentence. That's where truth comes from, ladies and gentlemen, the gut. And when you open your book, you literally trace the whole history of the U.S. going back to the Puritans. And part of how our religious fervor that led to some of the original Puritans and settlers coming here drives this appeal to what we believe as opposed to what is empirically knowable. It was a distinction between America and Europe that played out throughout the next few centuries.
Right. And it's interesting, of course, that the first English settlers, first white settlers, came to America just as the Age of Reason and the Enlightenment were blooming in Europe, which is so interesting because, of course, that was significantly and conventionally about the rise of reason and skepticism toward blind religious faith and all the rest, but not our people, not these first American settlers who were, yes, seeking religious freedom, the Puritans and Pilgrims were, but we have to remember that they were this extreme faction, this kind of cultist faction of the extreme part of the Puritans who were themselves extreme Protestants. So they were religious zealots. There's just no two ways about it. And so that became, certainly for the first century, for the 1600s in New England, as America, modern America, America was beginning, became a fundamental part of our American character. And freedom at that point, as liberty and grew, and the Puritan theocracy ended by the early 1700s, was really freedom to believe in other rather extreme religions, Quakerism and so forth, and Shakerism. That was the nature of freedom. Not so much freedom not to believe in the supernatural, but freedom to believe differently in the supernatural. Meanwhile, down south, our original settlers were convinced for 20 years with no evidence that they were going to find gold in the ground in Virginia. They didn't. They died. They kept coming and hoping. And it took them a generation or more to decide that, I guess there is no gold here. So those are the germs of the American character in my history.
We should also be clear about what you mean by extreme in terms of religion. From what you described in the book, in Fantasyland, by extreme, some of the things that you describe sound a lot like, and this is an uncomfortable comparison, but you substantiate it in the book, it sounds a lot like some of the things that the Taliban would do, or that a Muslim religious extremist would do in terms of regulating people's lifestyles and potentially killing people who don't follow along.
Well, there's no question that in the 1600s, in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, the Puritans were they were very Taliban-like. There was even a proposal at one point that women wear veils, if you want to make it very Taliban-like.
Right.
But yes, it was a theocracy where the state and the clergy were one. That's how we started. So yeah, there's no two ways about it. And again, this is, you know, the rest of Christendom at the time, European Christendom, starting really in the 1600s and certainly during the 1700s and 1800s and beyond, was not going in that direction. It was going in the direction of less literalism, less controlling of believers' lives. But the American Puritan beginnings were quite different.
We are speaking to Kurt Anderson, the author of Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, A 500-Year History. Would love to hear from you, too. Email 1A at WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. A number of you have been brave enough to share some of the things that you believe in that may or may not be well substantiated. Andrew writes, despite a lack of strong evidence, I choose to hold out hope that Sasquatch is out there. It's a fascinating idea that a furry human relative could be hiding out up north. Chef Rob tweets, I will forever believe in Mercury in retrograde because it proves true as I deal with the public in my restaurant. Hashtag crazy folk. And we also got a text message that says, a belief I hold is that the moon does not actually orbit the Earth if orbit is defined as traversing a complete circuit around an object. To the text club, if you would like to join our text club, just text 1A, that's the number 1, the letter A, to 63735. That's 1A to 63735. Kurt, what was your goal in this book? As I said, when I put the book down last night, I wasn't sure how to feel. I felt enlightened for sure, but I kind of felt like I felt like the emperor who realized he had no clothes. Like, it didn't come away from the book feeling good at all, and maybe that was your goal, but what are you trying to do with this book?
Well, if you were already feeling great about the state of truth and reality, then congratulations.
Well, no. So, I'm a journalist. I know too much. No.
I guess my goal was trying to figure this out. I had some sort of big ideas, half-baked ideas of, oh, I think Americans are this, and maybe we got here this way, and maybe it involves our entertainment culture as well as our religious culture and our political culture. How did this work? It was really just a set of an inquiry, like, how did we get here? I've been thinking about it for a decade, started working on it in 2013. I went back and said, okay, maybe it was just in the 90s as the internet age began. And then I said, no, there's something more than that. It's not just, what I'm talking about was enabled by technology and the internet to an amazing degree. But no, it's earlier than that. And then I hit on the 60s. My last novel was, a lot of it was set in the 1960s. And I thought, oh, that's when everybody suddenly could find their own truth, and science was not necessarily any better than magic and all those things. Then I thought, no, that didn't just, again, as huge a change as the 1960s wrought, it must go back further. And I kept following the threads back further and ended up in 1600. So that's how it started. And I didn't have, it's not like I had the answers and just typed them up. I have written historical novels. I'm interested in history, but I knew what ninth graders know about all the Puritans or P.T. Barnum, right, or all of the things I touch on. So I had to sort of figure out in a pretty deep way the various strands of this, of Americans' insistence on believing the dubious or the untrue, the anti-establishment instinct that was so strong from the beginning that leads us to say, no, I know better than any expert or the elite or the intellectuals, that kind of thing. All these strands. So I started out trying to figure out, what has happened in the last 20 years, then it became the last 5 centuries.
I should also note, one of the other big themes in the book, and I'm looking for the quote from P.T. Barnum, I'll find it in a second, but one of the other big themes in the book is not just what Americans think about the world, but what Americans think about ourselves. This idea of Americana and notions of our nation, some of the Wild West mythology, some of the antebellum South mythology that is just not true and distinct from something like, say, Disneyland, where Walt Disney kind of idealized Marceline, Missouri, where he grew up, and created just a hyper-clean version of a real place, separate from this Americana that we think is at our roots, at our underpinnings, but never really was.
Well, never really was, or certainly the people who feel this strong nostalgia for it never experienced it. And that was, again, true in the early 1800s when Daniel Boone became a superstar, one of the first sort of American celebrity superstars. And because, he was a natural man who swung from vines and wrestled bears, that became a figure of nostalgic yearning even when he was alive, still in the 1800s, because things had gotten too civilized. So no, nostalgia is a real thread of this, and nostalgia, we're all nostalgic for various things, and it's a natural condition. But Americans have always had it in a particularly acute way. Back then, in the 1700s, and even in the 1800s, nostalgia was still a medical condition. It came from the medical terminology for this kind of really crippling homesickness that people who left their homes felt. Whereas this nostalgia for this dreamy idea of how America used to be was this very American thing. And was always, and interestingly, it has always been simultaneously, America used to be so much better and purer and more authentic and virtuous and everything else. But we are also the greatest country on earth that will ever be. It's this kind of bipolar thinking. But no, and nostalgia in a kind of pathological sense absolutely drove white Southerners' romanticization of Dixie and slavery as abolition moved to the mainstream. And we decided, maybe we should get rid of slavery, and the nostalgia for, no, this is great. It's always right. been great. Our chivalrous, noble South right. was part of that.
Will writes from Adelphi, Maryland, what evidence is there that Americans are more gullible than other nationalities? And also, Natural Black Beauty tweets, yes, Americans are gullible and self-elitist. However, no more than any other human within the human race around the world. Let's test that. Are Americans really more gullible than other people? We'll put that question to Kurt Anderson, the author of Fantasyland, in just a moment. Stay close. Before we continue our conversation with Kurt Anderson, we would love your help with tomorrow's program. Tomorrow is day one of New York's Fashion Week. Against that backdrop, some of the world's top luxury brands are announcing they are banning ultra-skinny models. Two fashion houses say they will require medical documentation that their models are healthy enough to work. How do the fashion images you see affect how you view your own body? Where do you see that impact showing up in your life? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. How do the images of models, male and female, affect how you view your body? Tell us your story, regardless of your gender, 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. We will share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Kurt Anderson, the host and co-creator of the public radio program Studio 360 and the author of the new book Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history. Will from Adelphi, Maryland writes, what evidence is there that Americans are more gullible than other nationalities? My opinion is that our school syllabus focuses too much on algebra and calculus, not enough on probability and statistics. Everyone needs to be able to analyze issues in a mathematically rigorous way rather than judging based on emotional anecdotes. Well, I certainly hear Will on that last part, but Kurt, what about the evidence? Can we actually prove that Americans are more gullible in certain ways than human beings around the world?
Well, first of all, I think gullible is not the word I would use, and I don't even think it appears in the book. Because I'm not only talking about or mainly talking about gullible in the sense of, oh, this person can cheat you out of things because you're so gullible. Yes, there's that, and that is probably universal, and I don't know that Americans are any more able to be cheated by con men than any individual is by than a French person or a Japanese person. But what I'm really talking about is, well, there is empirical data. Again, not that all belief in religion proves gullibility, but there's massive amounts of survey research taken in every country in the world in the last decade, let's say, about a belief in religious practice of extreme kinds, like, for instance, faith healing, speaking in tongues, and so on, a kind of Christian practice that really exists in the United States and in the developing world and almost nowhere else in the developed world. And so on every measure, if you chart that those very specific kinds of religiosity, the United States is off the charts over with the Turkeys, the Philippines, the Saudi Arabias of the world, and the developed world is over here on the other side of the chart. So that's as close as empirical data I have on a kind of global, massive scale for what I'm talking about. But what I'm really arguing is that our character from the beginning has been this wish to believe in the fantastical, whether it's, oh, we're moving to the new world, we pilgrims, to create a new Jerusalem so that and a Christian theocracy so that Jesus can arrive the week after next, or I am going to insist against all evidence that I can get rich overnight. Those things were important. More than one historian has made the point that certainly in our first couple of centuries, as emigration was happening to this blank new world, and then later on is as well, that Americans have self-selected, people who come to America self-select for the willingness to believe advertising, because this new world was advertised heavily. It was probably the first global advertising campaign. Come here, it's Eden, there's gold, there's everything you need, there's freedom. So we have selected ourselves for that, and whether today the average American individual is more gullible than the average British person, I don't know. But part of our character has been that focus on believing the impossible dream.
Well, hold on a second. Yeah. Well, what actual harm is there? And you do get into this in your book, and I'd like you to express it, about what actual harm there is in believing in things like speaking in tongues, in believing in things like, you know, faith healing. I mean, if you're from a tradition that says that you can, you know, put your hand in a pit of snakes and not get bitten, and you get bitten and you die, tragic for you and your family, but that neither, to borrow from Thomas Jefferson, neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. Who cares, really, if people believe in fantastical things as long as it doesn't hurt me?
Well, that's exactly right, and that's why I love that Jefferson quote about picking your pocket or breaking your legs. He said, you can believe in no God, you can believe in 20 gods, I don't care if it doesn't hurt me or cheat me. Absolutely correct. That is what made America so amazing and exceptional in the positive sense for so many centuries, because the idea that everybody was free to believe whatever as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else was fine as long as there were a set of institutions and norms and establishments saying, yeah, those people can believe that. But all of us educated people, all of us respectable people understand that that isn't true, and that they are not speaking God has not made them immune to the vipers or whatever. And when it leaks into the public sphere, as it has done in the last few decades, as it never did before, as all of our institutions enable every kind of belief, like, maybe you were abducted by extraterrestrials. I don't know. That's what you say. Okay, who am I to gainsay that? And as we, for instance, start saying, no, there's no climate change. Climate change is a hoax, is a conspiracy. That is a new condition where the basic shape of reality, of social reality that has consequences for us all, has been challenged by believers or non-believers. And that's when people decide that they are entitled to their own facts. As long as, yes, you're absolutely right. No problem at all if people in their churches or in their homes believe X, Y, or Z. As long as it doesn't hurt me, doesn't hurt their children,
right.
Fine. But it has started hurting the rest of us.
And since you mentioned entitled to their own facts, certainly that has become an issue after the election of Donald Trump and this year with talk about alternative facts, so-called fake news, whether or not America is going through a post-truth moment. Back in November, Scotty Nell Hughes, who was a spokesperson for Donald Trump, came on the predecessor program to 1A, the Diane Rehm Show, and made headlines when she said this.
One thing that has been interesting this entire campaign season to watch is that people that say facts are facts, they're not really facts. Everybody has a way, it's kind of like looking at ratings or looking at a glass of half full water. Everybody has a way of interpreting them to be the truth or not truth. There's no such thing, unfortunately, more of facts.
That was Scotty Nell Hughes, a spokesperson for Donald Trump, speaking in November 2016 on the Diane Rehm Show, the predecessor to 1A. Kurt Anderson, first of all, Scotty Nell Hughes is wrong. There is such a thing as facts. There are certain things that are just empirically true. 2 + 2 = 4. Washington is the capital of the United States. You know, George Washington was the first president. So, yeah, there are facts. But how do we dig out of this from being a nation where facts are fungible things? Is there any hope for us to transcend this, or are we just doomed to play this game over and over?
Well, that is the $64 gazillion question, Joshua, and I am not without hope. I think those of us, part of what I've done here is with Vanishing Land is try to give people a template for saying, oh, this isn't just Donald Trump. This didn't happen 2 years ago or 3 years ago. There's been this long journey in our national experience and the choices we've made. Toward this post-fact era in which that we now inhabit, and from which we have a president who delivers more falsehood, whether he believes them or not, than any leader ever. So, how do we get out of it? I personally would like to see the back of President Trump's head. I want him gone. I'm not suggesting any violence.
No, I know what you mean.
I want him gone in 2020 and 2021. He's a symptom. He's not the cause. He's a large and extraordinary symptom of what I'm talking about. And if the coin had fallen the other way last November and Donald Trump were not elected president, everything I say it would still be true. It would just be that we didn't have a person who is the embodiment of Fantasyland as president of the United States. So what can we do? We can, each of us, in our own lives and our own families, as we teach our children, as we teach our grandchildren, to really seriously distinguish between what's true, what's dubious, what's false, as we have them try to distinguish between what's good and what's bad, what's foolish and what's wise. Take that seriously and not just give a pass to your crazy brother-in-law who thinks there's no climate change and George Soros is going to steal his Camaro, and then those of us like you, like me in the public sphere, we can say, that's you are entitled to your own opinion, but that's not true, as you do beautifully day after day on the radio. So we just have to, we can't be as squishy as we've especially been for the last 50 years and being such relativists and saying, that's your opinion. Maybe so. Maybe the earth is flat. We can't do that anymore.
Let me get to a few more of your comments in our remaining minutes. Tim emailed, I believe the reason why Americans are so easily duped is because we're pumped with fear from the media and our leaders. From terror alerts to Y2K to the show Cops causing fear of black men and so on. Paul in Missouri emailed, "Several years ago, I ran across a factoid that stated, depending upon the survey, between 25 and 40% of Americans believe the moon landing was faked. It seems that our thirst for infotainment has not increased our discretionary powers, but muddled our minds with nonsense." And Sean emailed, "Baha'is believe that world peace and justice are not only possible, but inevitable. Some call it an irrational belief, but I say you have to believe it to achieve it. Beliefs are critical for aspiration." I certainly do take Sean's point in that email, but back to Paul's point, a large part of what you describe in the book is America's propensity for conspiracy theories. Is there one in particular that briefly you could describe for us that kind of exemplifies the issue?
Well, certainly the idea that the 9/11 attacks were an inside job are exemplified, because it's not limited to the left or the right. It's a kind of cross the spectrum belief that something like, according to the surveys, a quarter of people still believe that the U.S. government was somehow complicit in those attacks. So that's certainly one. But then again, not to bring it back to our current president, but who can help it when we're having this discussion? Our current president entered politics in 2011 by professing a belief in a conspiracy that somehow hid the fact that our president at the time, Barack Obama, was born outside the United States. And by the way, was probably a practicing Muslim as well. So he didn't frame that as a conspiracy. He is also a lover of all kinds of conspiracies explicitly. But birtherism needed a conspiracy, a massive conspiracy of governments and journalists and other people to have happened. So that's an example. And again, this is not new. I mean, it got its, like so many of the things I write about, got really a kick in the 1960s after John F. Kennedy's assassination and the contentious set of beliefs around how that happened and what happened. But America has a long history of believing in conspiracies. Often those conspiratorial moments historically have lasted just a little while, like we hated the Masons for a while, for a decade in the 1800s. We hated the Catholics for a longer time, the majority of America.
Right.
We hated the Germans during World War I. Usually it rises, it falls. We have entered a time that is like no other in our history where conspiracy, and again, there are conspiracies. I'm not saying conspiracies never exist, but untrue, preposterous conspiracies. Just the default idea that, oh, there must be a conspiracy behind this, really has become a permanent condition in a big way in the United States in the last few decades, in a way it never has been in our history.
Let me get to a few more comments before we're out of time. A few more folks texted us, "I believe that ghosts exist and they're the residual life energy of a deceased person." Another listener texted, "I'm a PhD scientist. I'm still open to the concept of ghosts." And yet another wrote, "Astrology, even though there's not true scientific evidence, there's circumstantial evidence, and it's really interesting." I wonder, Kurt, maybe if that's a good place to end, this idea of it being really interesting. And of course, you mentioned cosplay and Comic-Con, and you write about live-action role-playing. There's another aspect of this, which is a lot more benign, I think, which is that as Americans, we just like to be entertained. And we're a culture where we've made room, whether it's Civil War reenactments or, you know, dressing up like Captain America at Comic-Con. It's just fun to play dress-up, and we're a nation where it's cool to do that.
Absolutely. The problem is, it seems to me, is when our whole, everything in our culture begins to blur the distinctions between real and fictional, that becomes a problem. No, you dressing up as Captain America next week isn't going to mean you're going to decide you need to have an arsenal of 24 AR-15s, or that there's no climate change. They're not in individual cases directly connected, but we have a society. And another thing that makes America so not unique, but American is that, yes, that widespread wish to pretend, to make believe. I don't think as a culture we entirely compartmentalize those. So yeah, I want to go to Burning Man. I've always wanted to go to Burning Man. That's great, and it harms nobody, but it is, to me, another American data point of like, oh, let's just pretend we live in this never-never land.
Yeah. And I appreciate you approving of me dressing up as Captain America, because he does believe in climate change, and he wouldn't need an arsenal of AR-15s. He only needs one. There Kurt Anderson is the host of Studio 360 and the author of Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history. Kurt, it is a fascinating and terrifying book, and I thank you for talking to us about it.
Thank you very much.
Remember to send us your stories about how the fashion images you see affect the way you view your own body, regardless of your gender, 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.